Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Joining me in studio, Steve Okun, the advisor for McLarty & Associates, senior advisor. Steve, good morning. Welcome back again to Weekend Mornings.
Thanks, GVZ.
Great to have you here again. And so much to talk about. And let's start with COVID-19 and this global impact that we are seeing intensify almost, well, daily when it comes to how businesses are having to look ahead and think about how they're going to do business in a world that is quickly closing down.
Well, you know, people want their governments to be competent. It doesn't matter what type of system you have in place. Is it two-party? Is it democracy? Is it parliamentary? Is it single-party rule? You want your government to be competent. And what we're seeing is that people don't believe governments are competent. People don't believe the Chinese government is being honest and truthful still, and there's a crisis in confidence there. The U.S. is plummeting in terms of the confidence in which it believes its government is competent to handle this. President Trump's approval rating is down from, you know, about a month, from 61% of the people approving of how he has done down to 44%. People are losing confidence, unfortunately, in the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. In Singapore, you don't see that. And so as confidence goes down, it's impacting businesses everywhere, and it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Well, it's not only the confidence in business, but the actual ability to do business. Now with, you know, they're talking about shutting down the area around Milan, Lombardy, you know, basically the whole northeastern part, all the way down to Venice, Italy, and quarantining it. So, you know, of course, Milan is the industrial and business capital of Italy. And so when you start to see some of these major things happening, New York State has now called a state of emergency. They don't have so many cases, but just to open up funding and that sort of thing. And so it's just people are not going to be able to move around as freely to get business done. Already we've seen, obviously, supply chains have been dramatically impact many cases. So the act of doing business, it seems to me, is going to be harder and harder to do.
Much harder. And you look at how Singapore handles it. Singapore, the businesses can tell the workers, you are going to work from home. China can say, you are going to work from home, or we're going to go to split shifts, half work from home, half come to the office, and vice versa. The United States doesn't have that type of system in place. So what you're looking at, very interestingly, when companies go out and they say, we encourage people to work from home because they can't force it. And then if they force people to work from home, what happens? Example for workman's compensation. If you get hurt and you're at home, are you covered? Are you not covered? Can the business be sued because you didn't have the safety in place at home that you would have at work? So it is going to really hit businesses when you get a mishmash of signals out of the U.S., you get a mishmash of signals out of China, where they're telling factories, run your electricity so we can show you're open even when you don't have workers, you're not producing anything. That's the problems we're going to run into. And that's why businesses don't know what to do, because they can't trust the facts.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a complicated problem. Let's shift it to the U.S. because there's some new numbers out on the Trump administration. And there have been many, many mixed messages coming from Washington. You know, the CDC says one thing, and the president just kind of, in several cases, has contradicted what has been said by healthcare professionals. So you had mentioned that you saw some latest figures about the confidence in the Trump administration in handling this.
In the U.S., you expect your government to be competent. And like, if there is a big snowstorm in a city and the streets don't get cleared, the mayor gets blamed for that. The same thing happens at the presidential level. If the president cannot handle a crisis with competence, it hits him. It doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or Republican. It hit Jimmy Carter when he had the plan to rescue the hostages that failed and Americans died as a result. It hit Bill Clinton when he went into the ordered, you know, the Branch Davidian compound in Waco, Texas, in the beginning of his administration, and many people died. And he took a crisis incompetence hit in his polling. The same thing is happening to Donald Trump now, because there's no clear messaging coming out of the White House. It's not science-based what's coming out of the White House. There's no transparency coming out of the administration. You're getting these mixed messages. And if the White House and the administration cannot do what Singapore does, have a science-based approach, approach where they are straight with the American people and talk about what is going to happen and what happens if A, if B, and we have plans in place and we'll escalate if needed, instead of saying it's all going to get better when the weather warms up, it's going to get worse. And that's really going to hit business, and it's going to hit the voting in November.
And we've seen one of the senior advisors at the World Health Organization just said they're not expecting it to get better when the weather gets warmer. They don't think that's necessarily a foregone conclusion.
And businesses and people have to start putting these contingency plans in place. It's really hurting the travel industry. So what's going to happen there? It's really hurting the gig economy and those workers who don't get a paycheck no matter what, the Uber drivers and Lyft drivers and Grab drivers and taxi drivers. Here you see the pictures in the Straits Times where, you know, the taxis are all just parked and not going anywhere. You got the airlines putting their planes in the desert in Arizona because they're empty and they're going to need a place to stay over a period of time. No one has any plans for this. And you really got to start thinking not just we're going to have a 1 month or a 2 month contingency. Plan for what happens if it happens for the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, at first we thought, well, maybe this will be the first and maybe second quarter, maybe just the first half of the year problem. And then the second half of the year, things will pick up. But I'm not quite so sure anymore. The other thing that's interesting, though, is there has been some opportunity for companies like the online, companies like Zoom and others, Skype, for doing video conferences, for example, so people don't have to travel. Some of the services industries that don't necessarily have a product that they have to move but can do things virtually, they are still open for business and doing things. So perhaps there is still some opportunity in some sectors. The heavy manufacturing and shipping sectors would probably, and as you mentioned, travel will be vastly impacted. But maybe some of these other ones should be okay, right?
Well, you know, you mentioned as well, like insurance companies. I have a friend who works for an insurance company, and she was saying, this is showing people you better have a business continuity plan in place. You better have insurance coverage for what you need. And so it's getting people to reassess. So it could be an opportunity for insurance companies. It could certainly be an opportunity and should be an opportunity for Southeast Asia, because people now recognize you better not put all of your eggs in the China basket when it comes to manufacturing. People were thinking about that when the U.S.-China trade war hit, but they said, when the tariffs go off, maybe we'll be okay again. Now, where you've got COVID-19 and the tariffs, people are saying, we've got to get out. So I was at a session with the chairman of the EDB here in Singapore that AmCham Singapore hosted, and he said, you know, we want to show, come to Singapore, go to Indonesia, help Indonesia get its fair share of the redistribution of the supply chain, and let's start thinking about that Batam Bintan Singapore corridor again, where we can work together to show this is a good place as an alternative for what you might have in China. So there's opportunities for countries, there's opportunities for businesses, but it is going to be at the same time where you need to plan for how you're going to get through the next 2, 3, 6, 12 months.
I think, you know, the word that comes to my mind is diversification, right? And I read an article yesterday, a very bearish article on China, saying China's over. China, you know, the age of China as the economic superpower is over. And I think that probably vastly overstates the situation. But it is interesting, you know, as you mentioned, people are going to have to just are forced now to find other sources for their products, for their manufacturing. Unfortunately, you know, Vietnam, Indonesia, these places still are not up to par with what China can produce and the quality and the ability to ship it around the world. So there's going to be a long lag time before those countries catch up.
But if the governments are smart, now is the time to start thinking with a 5-year plan. How do we change our customs regimes? How do we change our foreign direct investment restrictions? How do we integrate ASEAN better so that you can have a factory in Batam, but you can have your headquarters in Singapore and you can go seamlessly between the two when it comes to the transfer of funds, when it comes to protecting your intellectual property, you use Singapore courts, but you still have that IP in Indonesia. If they think creatively, it really could be an upside for ASEAN. Of course, ASEAN has never failed to disappoint when it comes to its economic integration, but maybe this really is the wake-up call of the opportunity that they have.
Do you see any of those conversations happening right now? Have you heard of anything? I mean, notwithstanding what the EDB had said at that briefing, but Is that actually happening right now, or is it just something that should happen?
It's starting to happen in bits and pieces in different countries where you see Thailand setting up regimes to enable factories to move from China to Thailand. But you have Thailand competing with Vietnam, competing with Malaysia, competing with Indonesia. That needs to happen. ASEAN is not the EU, certainly not the EU pre-UK. Yeah. It's not the EU, but it can do better in terms of economic integration. And those talks have been going on for decades, but maybe now we'll see some meat on the bones.
Gotcha. Okay, let's move on. The White House has a new acting chief of staff, or a new chief of staff. Mick Mulvaney is leaving, which has been expected for a number of weeks, and now his replacement is set to come in.
Yes, and so this shows in part that it's typical for the president to churn through his senior staff. He's done this more than any president literally in history, you know, going through his senior staff and his cabinet. But it also shows that he's tooling up for the reelection campaign. Meadows is the congressman from North Carolina, has been a fierce defender of the president. He's very tied into the president's base. He will be a spokesperson for the president's base. And this is part of that reelection campaign, is he is going to be seen by the president as much more effective as his chief of staff, as now 2020 becomes about two things. It becomes about the election and getting reelected. Hopefully, it's also about how we can deal with COVID-19 and the administration can come together working with the governors, working with the Congress. Vice President Pence seems to be trying to do that, even though the president sometimes attacks governors of a different party. But Vice President Pence is working with them. So hopefully Meadows can help on the front of getting the administration aligned on the coronavirus. He's also going to wear that second hat, which is about the campaign. It was a little bit shocking to see the president go to the CDC to talk about the coronavirus wearing a campaign hat. He should be splitting both. Hopefully he can split both, because we really got to address COVID-19 as a country, not as a political issue.
This position of chief of staff is a very tricky one. Now, we've had, what, three of them come through? And yeah, he's the fourth. And at the same time where you need to support the president, you also have to play to his needs, his whims, his whatever. So the ones that have tried to control the president too much have not lasted. The ones that have let him go too, you know, wild, too on his own, haven't done well either. And so there's this very delicate balancing act of somebody who has enough power and authority to really help the president help himself and also let him be himself.
Here's the issue. President Trump is his own chief of staff. It doesn't matter who has the title. By never giving Mulvaney the title of chief of staff over a year and calling him the acting chief of staff, just showed he was not empowered. He's not going to empower Meadows either, and he's not going to empower anybody, because he's his own chief of staff. He sets his schedule. He gets calls from outside, from friends. What do you think I should do? There is no formal process in place. You know, General Kelly tried to do that, and he didn't last that long.
Yeah.
And Mulvaney let the president be his own chief of staff. He lasted a little bit longer. Now we're in crisis mode on two fronts, campaign and COVID. So I don't see the president letting him do any better. Every president treats their chief of staff differently, but if you don't empower them, it doesn't matter. They're not going to be effective.
Okay, finally, the U.S. primaries. Super Tuesday's done. Elizabeth Warren is out. It's coming down to Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. Where are we going from here? We got a big one coming up, Michigan, right?
Well, in fact, Michigan is make or break for Bernie Sanders, because if Bernie Sanders cannot win Michigan and Joe Biden keeps the momentum going, we now roll into March 17th, the St. Patrick's Day, which we've talked about. And there's four critical primaries there. Florida is the big one on March 17th. Bernie Sanders talking about how Castro had good elements is not going to play well in Florida. So if Sanders can't win Michigan, he really isn't going to win on March 17th. And then it is going to be figuratively over. Biden will have the momentum. He'll have the numbers to take a majority of delegates and win on the first ballot. So March 10th is really make or break for Bernie Sanders. He seems to be struggling there. Biden's on a roll. Let's see if Bernie Sanders can't get the bounce back in, you know, the Bernie bounce back in Michigan, where we had the Biden bounce back in South Carolina. It's not looking good for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Elizabeth Warren has not thrown her support. Most of the candidates have not thrown their support yet toward either Bernie or Biden. When would we expect to see some of these candidates who have dropped out formally, you know, put their teams and their efforts toward one of the candidates?
Well, if you're Elizabeth Warren and you're reading the tea leaves and you see that Bernie Sanders is not going to be the nominee and no one sees him as having a solid shot at it, he has an outside shot still, why would you support Bernie Sanders today when he could be out of it figuratively in a week or
sense.
A week and a half? So you hold back. Now, it's going to hurt Elizabeth Warren a bit with some of her supporters for not going behind Bernie and instead staying neutral. But if you're Elizabeth Warren, look, Joe Biden is, you hope, is going to be the president. You're going to work for him during the campaign to become president. Why would you support Bernie Sanders now? Politically, it makes all the sense in the world for Elizabeth Warren to sit back at least until we see what happens in Michigan, if not on St. Patrick's Day, and then maybe she could decide to go with Bernie. But it politically is the makes the most sense to do what she's doing.
Yeah. All right. Steve Okun, Senior Advisor, McClarty Associates. Thanks again, as always.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.